because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin's Eye summary of this week in the Capitol. Little different, JR. Let's look at May. May 1. Happy May. Okay. Happy May Day, man.
You too.
May is budget decision month for the Joint Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a list here of 10 major decisions that they've got to make. But first, let's look at some decisions that they made in April. So, okay, let's go through those. They killed the governor's plan to convert the DNR and Department of Ag boards from policymaking to advisory. Big deal?
No, I think I get the impression that they weren't very happy with the feedback from their constituents saying, we want a say in things, if you will. It was another step that would consolidate power in the executive branch.
Yes.
I don't care who's governor. They always want to consolidate power in the executive branch. Another kind of like elbow, if you will. No, not so fast. We want to keep a little bit of a say outside of your office, if you will.
So the hook and bullet crowd won on this one, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They ended the $300,000 a year that is a subsidy for the Citizens Utility Board. Cub has been getting this since 2009. It was earmarked by the Democrats. You think that'll be revived? Does anybody care?
There are a couple people I've talked to who would like to see it come back, even like from the not the Democratic crowd, if you will, the other side. I just don't know that there's going to be enough juice to say we really to save that money for that. Why? The mentality seems to be, look, can't they go out and fundraise on their own or be a self-sustaining unit, if you will? So the governor's saying on the public radio and public TV, right? Hey, it's time to stay on your own 2 feet kind of thing. So,
You heard that appeal from public radio this week. The budget would cut $3 million from public broadcasting. So anyway, moving on. Joint Finance also decided that if you want to intervene in a PSC major cases, and they've got some major cases coming up, and you have an expert witness right now, the PSC said you can be reimbursed 100% of the cost of your expert witness. Cut that in half, Darling says. This would require interveners to have, quote, skin in the game. So I don't know if you have any follow-up comment on
that.
It
also makes it tougher to challenge things.
It does.
Got a free pass, if you will, to slow down the process. There's been a concerted effort with this administration to streamline things, speed them up. Now, they still will say there are plenty of safeguards in place, but for critics, it's a push to rush things through to make it easier for business to operate Wisconsin. They want to change the regulatory climate here and make it better for business.
And some of the citizens who don't like the proposed ATC transmission line from Dubuque to Middleton, they would have a harder time fighting it under if this became law, right?
Yeah. Look at the fights we've seen on other transmission lines. The one that went from Madison to, was it Minnesota, a dozen years ago?
Oh,
remember
huge.
That fight?
Oh, yeah. The signs are still up in northern Wisconsin.
Yes.
Who dropped the line. They killed the proposed tuition freeze on tech colleges. Do you have any? Do you have a feel for that? I know the tech colleges said we really can't deal with it at this time. This would tie our hands.
Yeah, I mean that's part of it. From what I understand, too, there's this thing of like you're getting a good investment, if you will, off this payment, this tuition. So let them operate, if you will. That's a job creator in their minds, the tech college system.
And then finally, killed the governor's plan to replace city, village, town property assessments with county or regional assessments. Didn't the governor try this 2 years ago? It's still a non-starter.
Locals they're very nervous about change.
Sure they are.
This is something that kind of gets them going, wait a second, what's going on, how's it going to operate?
Okay. Okay, now let's look at the 10 major decisions that finances has to make this month. The amount of state aid for K-12 schools, the governor's budget cut $127 million.
In the first year?
Yeah. You've heard legislative leaders said that's our top priority, restoring that.
Number one thing I hear out of the gate is to get money back in there. Now, where is the money going to come from? How much will be there to play with? Can they find money from other places and move it around? But number one goal is to restore that cut and keep schools whole.
Well, we're about to get Fiscal Bureau estimates. Mm-hmm. Are we going to get a Monday, Tuesday, early next week, right?
Sometime next week is what lawmakers told us. Now, Bob Lang obviously tries not to say when because he gets calls constantly until they come out. But we are expecting him sometime next week.
But Walker telegraphed that at his last time taking questions from reporters, said it'll be somewhat higher, but not a great deal.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing we talked about this last week. When's the money come in? Is it in this fiscal year,
yep.
which ends June 30th,
15.
Or in the next biennium? There are signs the economy is kind of hitting a little bit of a flat spot, if you will, so that could not be a good thing. But if the money comes in this fiscal year, it won't be a huge pot for lawmakers to spend because the Walker administration will say, okay, we took all these cost-saving measures that may have a longer or higher cost in the long run. We might not do those now. Now, I've heard other people say, look, you already taken the hit from announcing it, just go ahead and do it, and let's have the money to spend, but see how that plays out.
It was interesting DOR estimate this week. July through the end of March, tax collections only up less than 2%, 1.8.
Yep. LFB had projected 4.98% growth for the first year.
Whoa.
The big thing, though, is remember we changed withholding tables last year.
Yeah.
We won't know the full extent of that until April. So April collections are in. So years before you get a big, big return from the state, you might get a smaller return from the state, then that money kind of like will balance out. But we don't know. We haven't seen, this is our first time with this new tables. You'll see how collections
we're all
grow.
Waiting on the numbers. Number two, remove the 1,000 student limit on out-state choice students. I see this as a fait accompli. I think it's a done deal, don't
no,
you?
The money is not there. No, here's the thing. The way Walker structured those vouchers, okay, he's saying if you're from Beloit and Middleton and Green Bay, you all get pulled out of your district. Your money that goes with you comes into a pot. Mm-hmm. We're going to mix it all up, and each kid gets the same size voucher.
Average, statewide.
Now, what's going to happen is if you're from a poor district that has, or a wealthy district that has low state aid, you're going to be a draw, if you will, from that pot, not a contributor. It's not enough to fund the vouchers the way they're currently funded. The choice people are not happy about that. I'm hearing talk about maybe a more measured approach to an expansion because there's not the money to fund K-12 fully and a full voucher. Now, maybe they find a big pot of gold that can do it, but
nope, minus that,
you know, I don't get the impression they can do a full statewide expansion day one and fully fund it. Now, maybe in the end they take the kind of the Walker approach, but I just don't get the impression.
Even though the fine print in the governor's approach says we're only going to pay this for if you transfer from a public school to a private school. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an important change from the...
Very important change.
Right.
But still, those kids who would transfer aren't going to get the full cost of tuition for St. Catherine, you know, all the way down the road.
And then we've talked about this repeatedly. Number three on the major to-do list, the $300 million two-year cut in state aid to the UW system. If any additional money goes to K-12, $300 million cut in the UW system looks pretty obvious to me, my friend.
Yes. The first draw is K-12. If they can make K-12 whole and there's money left over, maybe then UW gets a little bit of a breather, if you will. Now, they could find other cost-saving measures or other flexibilities to help them save money. But, yeah, I don't know that that cut will be dropped dramatically. I get the impression they want to shave some off, but how much can they do? Well, that's up to LFB and what they
can. Notice I didn't even list the governor's proposal for UW system autonomy because I consider that DOA.
It is dead. Now, they might sign, they might find some flexibilities, you know, procurement, buildings, things like that. But you've seen a message from lawmakers of, we're not giving you full tuition free rein, if you will. We're going to have a cap on
oversight
tuition going forward.
Yep.
We don't trust you. The conversation about the authority, we expected some big changes to things like tenure, shared governance.
Yep.
And you're saying protect it to the hilt?
Right.
Not such big fans.
And what's your reading of the governor's proposal to borrow $1.3 billion for highways? Nobody wants to borrow $1.3, but how much are they going to have to end up borrowing?
Well, the question is, do you want to cut projects?
No.
Do you want to raise a gas tax?
Cut my project in my backyard? I want to cut that ribbon, man. Go ahead.
Raise a gas tax?
No.
Raise registration fees?
The governor 2 days ago said, I want a budget with no gas tax increase. Go ahead, excuse me.
I get the impression there's going to be a conversation about the gas tax because Governor Walker has, remember, two masters, not just the people of Wisconsin, but the people of Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina. And you don't want to sign a tax hike when you're running for president in a Republican primary. So it would be bad for him to do that. But these lawmakers are going, even Republicans who I consider to be fairly conservative are saying, we have a long-term problem with the transportation fund, and we are not going to fix it by borrowing.
Right.
Now, the other thing is, these big-ticket items are all in southeastern Wisconsin. The
Marquette. Zoo Freeway?
That's going to be, what, four more years?
Yeah, it's 4 more years to finish it.
They're
$1.7 billion.
Still doing 94 from the state line to Milwaukee. There are some big-ticket items still to be done down there. And now they're talking about expanding I-39-90 to six lanes from Madison
to Illinois.
What's going to happen with those projects?
Right. Okay, we talked about going here to point five, raise the gas tax. We talked about that. The $75 vehicle registration fee, that hasn't been bumped since 2008. I'm not arguing to pay more, but wouldn't that make sense?
You can make the argument of it hasn't been changed in a while, the cost of inflation, et cetera. The problem is this. Certain lawmakers you talk to will say, great, you want to raise some money off of that. The pain you feel from hitting Wisconsin drivers only pales in comparison to, hey, gas tax, you hit everybody. All these Illinois people come up to go in our state parks and drink beer, like Howard Markline says.
Yep.
They would pay the gas tax. They don't pay the registration fee. So it's a hard sell with Governor Walker on the gas tax. The registration fee is an easier sell, if you will, because it's a fee. It's not a tax, even though some people would consider it a tax on having a car.
Oh, but also, as we've discussed, if you take the $75 fee and raise it, kick it 10 bucks to 85, it only raises 47 million, and you have a problem in the hundreds of millions.
Yes.
Yeah. State aid, now let's talk about the Bucks deal. I know we're going to talk about that later. State aid between 150 million, that appears to be Voss Fitzgerald's latest offer, and the governor's original offer of 220 right. to help for a new Bucks arena.
What you have is a target of how much they can get the locals to kick in. And what the baseline, I think, is a good baseline for this discussion is the state, if nothing happens, if the Bucks go away and the state of Wisconsin ends up taking over the BMO and Bradley Harris Center and having to take care of it, $100 million in deferred maintenance, tearing it down, whatever you're going to do with it.
With no tenant.
It's no anchor tenant, no offense to Marquette's basketball program. But you're talking, let's say, $120, $125 million in total cost for everything.
Yeah.
That's your base number because that's what happens if you do nothing. Plus, you lose the revenue of the jock taxes. So somewhere between 125, 150, that may be the state kind of sweet spot. The question is, to get to 220, the locals have to do. Tom Barrett said no property taxes. And, of course, he said that. He's up for re-election in April of 16. Now,
against the Bob Donovans, potentially yes. David Clark. Go ahead.
Now, the people who've announced so far are not blowing anybody away. But you are crazy if you don't think there's a crime problem in Milwaukee right now that's a vulnerability for Mayor Barrett. He's got to worry about that. Raising the property tax makes your life X percentage points harder come April of next year.
Right.
So that's an issue for him. Abley's been much more willing, from what I hear, in terms of like offering ideas or being open to revenue uppers or revenue contribution.
But he hasn't floated any numbers publicly.
No, he's been very quiet, but he's willing partner in discussions. Barrett's still publicly in discussions, what I hear, saying, we got to hold the line on this.
The governor stepped in meeting yesterday. He was there. And you and I thought maybe he's there as a closer to announce some deal. But now Barrett comes out and says, or somebody comes out and says, we're still weeks away, right?
Yeah, well, the governor kind of created this like anticipation, if you will, on Wednesday, I think it was. Oh,
I'm going to be there.
Last week, Scott Fitzgerald said the governor's not really involved, but Eric Shoup, chief of staff, is a key player, key liaison. Everybody involved in this process, really doing, you know, a big part of it. The governor now is stepping in, but he's not really, it's all not about the state, it's about what Republican lawmakers can get out of Tom Barrett.
Yeah.
I don't think Governor Walker is going to convince Tom Barrett to do anything. So he's not the closer, if you will, right now. Maybe next couple of meetings, but right now it's about Tom Barrett.
Yep. Number seven, the moratorium on stewardship program land purchases, which, by the way, wouldn't be a short-term moratorium. This would last for 15, 16 years.
There have been some concerns. It's an interesting split. There is a dynamic in the Republican caucuses of people, especially up north, who don't want the state buying any more land because where is it being bought? In their backyards. You buy that land, it eats up, you know, available resources. They don't like it. So you have a split, if you will, from northern lawmakers, and then you have like Robin Voss saying, hey, you know, there are projects in my backyard which is being develop more rapidly, if you will, in southeastern Wisconsin, where there are key pieces of, you know, X project that if you protect the land now, it goes away forever. So there's a little bit of a rub there. I'll be interested to see if they find a compromise somewhere between the moratorium and some kind of leeway.
On this issue, they can always look in the numbers. Increasingly, more and more state cash is being paid just on past loans. Mm-hmm. Your debt service.
Debt service, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Drug test applicants for unemployment, food stamps, and other public benefits. They had a committee hearing on this yesterday. Boy, and the Council of Churches and the Catholic Conference says, don't do this. Is this going to be a tough issue, or is Walker going to get his way?
I get the impression Republicans are on board with the philosophy, the theory of we should be drug testing folks around public assistance because it is a hurdle to getting a job if you are addicted to drugs. The question is it going to be legal? What's the structure going to be like? The cost? Right now, what the governor's proposing is you have to take a survey. You answer the survey, they screen you through the survey to see, okay, you have indications, you may be a problem. Then you're tested. Then if you're past positive, then you go into treatment, all right? How's that all going to work? Will the feds ever sign off of it? Those are, like, still big questions. I think lawmakers, they want answers. If you went through the public hearings of the budget and listened to them, there's a lot of, okay, well, how's this going to work? Can you give me details? The answer was no.
No.
We have to get a waiver from the feds. We need your permission.
Secretary Newsom says we'll wait for federal clarification. Excuse me.
We need your permission to do the waiver, then to get the details set. We'll take care of it later on. Lawmakers are going, wait a second, you know. I'm ceding all this authority to you to do what I like in principle, but I don't have answers. That's hard sell sometimes.
Okay, number nine, restructure senior care, family care, IRIS human service programs. You want to talk about emotional testimony, both in the Capitol and out on the public hearings, in wheelchair, people with disabled pleading and their family members pleading. I don't see any major change. I don't see the governor getting the major changes he recommended in February of these.
Senior care, you're hearing more and more Republicans saying, I have constituents who tell me the $30 enrollment fee, whatever it is a bargain.
It hasn't even been changed since it started.
Even if you double it, it'd be a bargain. Triple it, it'd be a bargain. So I get the impression there will be some kind of change to either the co-pays or enrollment fee or something that draws in more revenue out of senior care. So, but I think they're going to preserve it. Now, the other question is, well, they say if you're in senior care, you're good. But those people are joining senior care, you have to go apply for Medicare Part D first.
Right.
That could be another, you know, possible solution for them. There's that. With IRIS, I get the impression that they want to keep some kind of self-direction, if you will.
That's a caseload of only 11,000, but those are 11,000 very emotional cases.
Yes. The issue is they have to bend the cost curve in Medicaid. It was the biggest eater of new GPR dollars this budget.
62%
$650 million dollars went to Medicaid.
Yep.
How do you bend the cost curve? Bend the cost curve to get people to manage care. That's the rub, moving from fee-for-service to managed care while preserving, if you will, some self-direction. That's going to be a task. Other question, how quickly can you do it? I don't know if they can do it in 2 years. They may have to start transitioning, if you will, towards something like that.
Okay, number 10 on my list, lay off DNR scientists. The Democrats say you're laying off the scientists who did a study saying there would be major problems with the mine in Ashland and Iron Counties. But the governor says, if we need a scientific study, we'll go out and hire it. What's your take on that?
There are certain people like Rob Coles, for example, who are passionate about needing scientists. It depends if you can find somebody on finance who is passionate about keeping those scientists, to be honest. That happens a lot of times with the budget where it's a 16-member committee, let's be honest, 14 members really control what's going on, or 12 what's going on.
12 hours, 4 Ds.
Can you get your caucus on board and find 9 votes to preserve that? That's going to be a kind of question.
Okay, those are my 10. Yeah, do you have anything to add?
Prevailing wage, that's going to be discussed in the budget. I don't know, though. I don't get the impression that a repeal is going to happen. There's not going to be the will. That is the word we've heard from leadership for weeks. There's not the support for repeal. However, they could do things like, changing the threshold when it kicks in.
Yeah.
Change how they figure out what the prevailing wage will be. Change how, effectively in rural counties, change how it's calculated because you have these surveys that help calculate prevailing wage. If you're a rural area with few employers who fill out surveys, you have wild fluctuations 1 year to the next with prevailing wages. So maybe they find ways to form it that way.
Do you see prevailing wage being added to the budget in some way?
A reform, quote-unquote reform?
Yeah.
Very possibly. A repeal, I don't get the impression there's a support to do it right now.
Okay, well, we were going to talk about prevailing wage later in the show, but let's continue this dialogue on prevailing wage. So Speaker Voss says, we don't have the votes to blow it, to repeal it, to get rid of it. It's a 1930s law. I've got the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance study before me. So Voss said, we're talking here about reforms. We can't get rid of it. But Senator Steve Nass schedules a public hearing on an outright repeal on Tuesday and then a vote in committee to repeal on Thursday. And is Fitzgerald, the Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, saying there's no votes in the Senate and the Assembly from Speaker Voss to outright repeal it?
Both leaders are saying we don't have the support for repeal. Fitz last night said, this vote makes me nervous because if we want to do any changes and you go ahead with this anyway, this committee vote, and people get upset, you may blow up the possibility of reform bill or the budget. The number of lawmakers have said they're unsure about it. Here's what's interesting. It's a 5-member committee that Nass chairs. Two of the people in the committee, Republicans, are co-authors of
Van
the bill.
Wongard and Nass.
The two Democrats, Larson and Wirch, there are no votes confirmed. I spoke with Howard Markland yesterday before Nass announced his hearing, just talking about it in general. He questioned the savings of prevailing wage. He would lean more toward a reform or change of the formula. So if he votes that kills it in committee, unless he can go find another way to pull it on the floor. They have a hurdle to clear there.
Speaker Voss, when he was asked on the Jay Weber show, was talking about prevailing wage. Were you surprised that he said that Senator Jerry Petrosky is the new Dale Schultz? I was. What did Senator Petrosky ever do to
voted
Speaker
against right to work? You know, I don't know, had his own mind, not towing the GOP or I don't know what there's a personal there.
Jerry Petrosky is a low-key, I mean, he's Schultz welcomed getting into some of these high-profile issues like mining and stuff like that. Jerry Petrosky, different style.
In Right to Work, he issued a statement during the last few hours of the floor debate saying, I'm a former union guy.
Yeah.
I appreciate these hard hat guys. I am not voting for this. I can't vote for it. So otherwise, I mean, Jerry Petrosky is not somebody who breaks the party orthodox very often.
No, he isn't.
Now, on the speed limit bill, he said, I've got concerns about having people go 70 miles an hour at grade crossings like 151 where you've got a road crossing it.
Yeah.
I don't like that section being 70. I want it to stay at 65.
And Highway 39 up in his area, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of at grade crossings.
But other than that, can you find many bills where he's broken with party line this session?
Nope. He's been a good soldier.
He's been known as somebody who works the district very well. He's in a swing to lean Republican district, well-liked up
there. Decker's old district, then Galloway, then Petrosky. Go ahead.
Works it very hard, praises a hard worker. So I'm not sure what the rub is yet.
Okay. Meanwhile, in the last 10 days, the John Doe debate has hit national. I mean, National Review, Rush Limbaugh, Eric O'Keefe goes on Megyn Kelly saying, I'm defying a secrecy order. All this help or hurt Governor Walker, who wants to be president?
I am sure there are people who are opponents of Governor Walker's who are pushing the storyline of, this is a guy that you should take a second look at because there's something going on in his background. For Governor Walker, though, if you can manage the spin, it makes you a hero even more for conservatives because you're a victim of the left. These guys have pursued you unfairly, illegally, whatever verb you want to use, adjective you want to use. This is a guy who's been through the he's battle tested. He's been there. Here's the interesting thing about John Doe. John Doe 2 allows Walker to explain away John Doe 1. John Doe 1 is more problematic. You had half a dozen people, either who are aides or associates, donor, who are charged criminally and convicted. People who are doing campaign work in his office, feet away
when
from
he was county executive. Doe 1 dealt with aides when he was county executive.
Now, you could argue all you want about should people doing political work on state time or county time be charged with felonies, all that kind of stuff. But there's a secret email server in their office, all these things.
Which a criminal complaint says was 25 feet away from the Walker's office.
Okay, there's a more little closer to Walker problematic. John Doe 2, though, that's about theories of what's allowed under campaign finance law. He can then say, look, this is an illegal search. They did these searches that were found improper by two different judges. This is a partisan DA who now have stories, you know, true or not, about he's got a wife who's in the union and upset about that. It gives him cover to swipe it all away, partisan witch hunt, ignore all of this.
And let's look at that. Let's look at, okay, Walker, when he was on radio station WHOAM in Des Moines, even if you're a liberal Democrat, you should look at the raids and be frightened to think that if the government can do that against people of one political persuasion, they can do it against anybody, largely apolitical, the W word, witch, the H word, hunt. Mm-hmm. You surprised at that?
No,
because he said it before.
Well,
or because he's speaking
he's
now.
Hinted at
with
it
with his presidential campaign.
He's hinted at it before. He said it was partisan. He's dismissed it in other forums. Just ramping up the rhetoric because now with the campaign trail and it helps again. John Doe 2 makes John Doe 1 kind of get lost in the shuffle.
And then that was followed by Francis Schmidt's statement. The governor's description of the investigation as a political witch hunt is offensive when he knows that the investigation was authorized by a bipartisan group of judges and is directed by a Republican special prosecutor appointed at the request of a bipartisan group of DAs. Schmidt saying what he's been saying, or is he taking it to a new level?
Well, Chisholm is kind of taking it to a new level. I didn't get to him in a second, but
yep.
They've been defending the John Doe too for a while, saying this is not a partisan witch hunt. You know, Francis Schmidt, Republican, multi-county investigation, all these things to try and say no,
veteran,
no, no.
U.S. Department of Justice prosecutor. Okay, now let's talk. Let's take a look at the Chisholm statement. Stripped of niceties, Mr. Schmitz is saying the governor is deliberately not telling the truth. The truth is always a defense, so let's get the truth out in a legal manner, not through lies, distortions, and misrepresentations. Here's my question. John Doe is now pending before the U.S. Supreme Court and the state Supreme Court. Was all this talk nationally designed to for one of those audiences?
Possibly, but it's also in the context of the campaign of, you know, Governor Walker's getting this attention.
Victim.
This is coming up.
Yeah. Okay.
So in Chisholm, I mean, there are people who are very critical of John Chisholm for this investigation who think that he doesn't understand campaign finance law. and the First Amendment. And when he's talking about Governor Walker being charged criminally for his calling a witch hunt, that's evidence to them of this guy does not understand the First Amendment and what it means. So it's fodder for his critics to kind of go after John Chisholm.
Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, without oral arguments, is still scheduled to rule on some of these John Doe issues, whether to shut him down, correct?
Just took the briefings. They're going to have a decision sometime, hopefully, or the end of the term in June 30th.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, remember I used the term as the court turns last week? Well, the court turned in a new way. I mean, let's just do a TikTok. By noon on Wednesday, the Government Accountability Board had certified the results of the constitutional amendment. The seven justices can pick the next chief justice. Then of the Associated Press reports, Gabelman sends an email. I vote for Justice Roggenzach, four of them. Roggenzach, Ziegler, Prosser, and who am I missing?
Ziegler.
Thank you. Four of them elect Pat Roggenzach. Mm-hmm. And that was done by about 6 p.m. Then Justice Abramson, her attorney, sends a letter to the federal judge because she is sued. Mm-hmm. Justice Roggenzach considers herself the chief justice. Now,
has accepted the nomination via email.
Right. And the three who voted, Abramson and Ann Walsh Bradley and Crooks, said this is not a timely email motion because there's still a federal lawsuit pending. Mm-hmm. What happens next in this? A May 18th hearing?
So, well, May 15th is a hearing, but what's next in that is Chief Justice Roggenzach last night issues a statement saying, now that I'm a Chief Justice, I'm going to help restore the credibility of the court, work with the states, and give back $8,000 I'm going to get in my new position to help people who can't afford legal representation.
And let's take a minute, because that was her first statement as Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. Let's just read that. My initial focus will be twofold. First, to enable the Wisconsin court system to better serve the public. Second, to begin repairing damage that has been done to the reputation of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I anticipate engaging each justice in a manner that will permit a more inclusive administration wherein justices will be asked to assume leadership of areas of the Supreme Court's administration and the judicial branch of government. Can you envision the court running with less dysfunction and a little bit more of the C word, collegiality, under Justice Roggenzach, J.R.?
Well, one of the rubs has been that there is a conservative majority on the court, but they were shut out of power because Justice Abramson was running the show. Now that four-vote block has all the keys, if you will. They run the show, and Pat Roggenzach is the Chief Justice directing things. So they can impose their will. Now, Justice Abramson, Justice Bradley, they might not be happy about that. What are they going to do in response? Will they play nicely? Will they kind of be quietly? You just kind of pipe down and accept it? That's a good question. I don't get the impression those seven people like each other all that much across the aisle, if you will.
Right.
So I don't know that it's going to like all of a sudden make them all come out singing Kumbaya and holding hands.
No. So. It's just very, very interesting. Okay, time for WisPolitics stock report. Rising.
The Bucks, I mean, still no deal, but finally for once there's like
the Bucks, which lost
right
by 54 points last night. Oh, excuse me.
That
was on the court.
Actually, the fact that they had a two-game hot streak and made the series interesting kind of like was good timing for them. The MMAC poll, now, there are people who have a problem with the questions, the way it was worded, if you
yes.
will. I get the impression.
Because it reaches the opposite conclusion of the Marquette poll. Excuse me.
But it's when voters have all the facts, they then reach a conclusion, it's a good thing. That said, Walker's involved personally now. There is this continuing feeling of they'll get something done. Now what? And like we talked before, Barrett's not going to do property taxes. What are they going to do? The governor, I think, today was in Milwaukee at the zoo, got kissed by a seal, said, I'm not a big fan. We're not going to do a sales tax hike to fund this thing. So how are they going to do it? Now that's the big question. But their momentum is starting to kind of, even for all the Bucks starts and stops and bad moves, the momentum is kind of like, almost unstoppable if we have to get a deal done on this arena.
Momentum off the court, certainly not sure. On it. Mixed.
Scott Walker, here's what's fascinating. This guy, on the heels of a series of stories saying he hasn't been here much the last few months. In fact, ours last Friday, of the 31 days in March, 31 days, 19 of them had no state business whatsoever other than a conference call. And the other ones all had a block of at least 4 hours for a hold time, which is either for personal stuff or political stuff.
Right.
Tell you how much that the campaign has consumed his life, if you will.
Yes.
Other stories out there about what he's been doing, his travels. All of a sudden now he's in Milwaukee, Racine, Milwaukee.
Wherever two or three
Green
are gathered.
He's doing stops today. He's going up to the banquet, the fishing opener up north.
Yep. Hayward.
On top of that, there's this interesting dynamic nationally where New York Times had a story about Governor Walker's team and what their philosophy is. they're going to see the early momentum to Jeb Bush. They can't match him dollar for dollar.
Right. They're playing the long game.
Lower expectations a little bit.
Yep.
But focus on being competent and ready for January. They can, you know, not match him dollar for dollar, but raise a good chunk of change, and he will not be broke, by the way, in this race. Come out there, have a good depth, can handle the issues, and then kind of go from there and be the alternative, if you will, to Jeb Bush. It's interesting also, there's another story that Walker and Rubio are like competing for that alternative to Jeb Bush, you know, the bridge between the grassroots and the establishment wing of the party. Another big story that came out in the New York Times this week was of the 250 top Republican donors in the country, half have given to Scott Walker.
Oh boy.
That is better than anybody else. Rubio's at 30%. Now Bush's numbers kind of skewed because his last campaign was 2002, if I remember correctly. So, but it shows you this guy has, because of the Democrats, when we recall him, he has this very vast fundraising network. He has an avenue, if you will, to do well financially. So his numbers all over the place, national polls, you know, I saw one today that he's trailing Hillary in Iowa. Those are still all name ID. All right, Wisconsin, not doing so hot. Issue for Walker with that is, his selling point is, I turn a blue state red, governor is conservative, and turn the budget around.
Survived a recall. First governor to ever survive a recall.
Then he's going to go sell it in Iowa and New Hampshire, and oh, by the way, my approval is 41%.
Yeah.
My budget is being reworked by Republican lawmakers that are happy with my It kind of undercuts the message, if you will.
Yep.
So, and there's some tension. What Robin Voss say about prevailing wage and Governor Walker? He hasn't been there. You know, a little bit of a kind of the
which is why he's,
in the eye,
which is why he's mixed. Yes. Falling?
Shirley Abramson, you know. This
named
is
to the court by Pat Lucey, 1976. Chief Justice,
1996.
Excuse me, go ahead. It's your call.
You know, I don't know if, I got the impression if it was a right move, if you will, this week to move so quickly. Some people thought, hey, it'd be better to wait till the term ends July 31st, have a natural transition, if you will, going so every 2 years from now on. But the fact that they move so quickly shows you how much they dislike each other on that court and how much hungry they are to change over. There's that. There's the lawsuit, which even Democrats, I mean, dyed-in-the-wool deep Democrats say it does not look, it's not a good PR move for her to be fighting this fight at the end. It makes her look like she's trying to hold on through the courts and defy the will of the people. It's going to be a sour note, if you will, to a very long, distinguished career to have it go out that way.
That's
so
true.
There's that, and there's also this push of, you know, there was some talk about putting it off, but these conservatives on the court and conservative groups are saying, look, we pushed this amendment through, it is time,
right.
Do it now.
Right.
So I get the impression that there may have been some pressure applied, if you will, to folks who were saying, wait, to no, get it done now.
But it's for Shirley Abramson, then this has to be a crushing professional and personal defeat.
Yes.
Just amazing. Well, okay. The river of news in the Capitol never dries up, does it, JR?
I hope not. I drink from it every day.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
And that's Rewind for May Day, May 1.